Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, April 29. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, joined by Max Armstrong and a few other people as we get together for our weekly visit to look at the fascinating world of markets, from Wall Street to commodities to precious metals, you name it. We try to talk about it here every week. And every week brings its special events and happenings. The stock market, probably on a daily basis, fairly quiet for the week. Ups and downs, but nothing really substantial, I think. But today, the stock market posted its largest weekly drop in more than 2 months as earnings reports continued to weigh. However, the S&P 500 and the Dow managed to close up for April after strong showings in the middle of the month. But once again, company results gave the market direction. For example, today, a 9% decline in shares of Gilead Sciences, weighing the most on both the S&P and the NASDAQ composite. And Apple shares were down for the 10th session in the last 11. Ended the week, Apple down 11.3%, the largest such decline since January of 2013. Apple and Gilead, alongside Corning, Goodyear, and Xerox, among the companies that reported earnings this week and are closing them with double-digit declines in their stock. So earnings reports indeed are having an impact on the marketplace. The weekly declines, 1.3% for both the Dow and the S&P. The NASDAQ down 2.7%, and it was the largest weekly drop for the Dow since the week of February 12th, and the largest weekly drop for the S&P and the NASDAQ going back to February 5th. And for the month, only the NASDAQ ended in negative territory. Today, Amazon went up more than 9%. If you want to buy a share of Amazon, it'll cost you $659.59. But the company's quarterly results blew past the analyst expectations. Now, when we started this current quarterly earnings report season, analysts were saying for the quarter, we would probably see about a 7.5% decline in the numbers compared to the same period a year ago. But it's turning out to be a little bit better. First quarter earnings from S&P 500 components expected to have fallen 5.7% from a year earlier. And of the 311 companies that have reported, 57% reported revenue above analyst expectations. That compares with the long-term average of 60%. But that's, I guess, summing up the day and pretty much the week on the stock market activity. But let's look ahead to next week, because it's going to be another busy one on reports and the quarterly earnings. The biggest report, of course, comes on Friday. That will be the health of the labor market. We get the monthly employment numbers, and we'll, in addition to that, on Tuesday of this week, we'll get the monthly auto sales data. And automakers expected to report that auto sales rose to an annual pace of 17,200,000 units in April. Also this week, the ADP National Employment Report on Wednesday. And also Wednesday, the Commerce Department will be reporting the U.S. trade deficit. But then, of course, on Friday, it's the Labor Department's employment report. Here's what they're expecting a week in advance. This is what they're looking at as of today. They think the Labor Department's report will show that non-farm payrolls increased 200,000 in April after gains of 215,000 in March. They expect the unemployment rate, though, to remain unchanged at 5%. Earnings report, well, we could spend the rest of the show talking about companies showing up, but some of the better-known ones, drug maker Pfizer, a component of the Dow, will be reporting on Tuesday. Mylan, the generic drug maker, will be reporting on the same day. Drug maker Merck & Company will be reporting on Thursday, so we'll be hearing from several major drug companies. In addition, Herbalife Limited, the nutritional supplement maker, is reporting on Thursday. CVS Health Corporation will report its first quarter earnings on Tuesday. And then we get into the energy area, too. U.S. refiner Valero Energy first quarter profit will be reported this week. SunPower Corporation, that's the number two U.S. solar panel maker, expected to post a first quarter loss when they report on Thursday. Sprint Corporation, the number four U.S. wireless carrier, will be out Tuesday. Starwood Hotels and Resorts Worldwide will be reporting on Tuesday. And then we get into cosmetics. Estee Lauder Company and Coty will be reporting this week. In the food area, we'll hear from Kellogg's and we'll hear from Kraft Heinz. And so another busy week, and there are a lot more companies we could take the time to go through, but we won't. A couple of things that I found interesting, actually today, and that was what happened at American Airlines. I don't know if we'll get an explanation on this or not, but American Airlines Group said it terminated Chief Executive Douglas Parker's employment agreement on his request. He will no longer be contractually entitled to receive a set level of compensation and benefits, but he will continue to be the company's chairman and CEO. Kind of a strange one. One other airline industry note today, Delta Airlines making a big airplane purchase today, 37 current generation A321 aircraft purchased from Airbus Group. Worth $4.25 billion. That's list price, but airlines generally get a pretty good discount from the list price quoted. The new jets will be delivered through 2019. Oh, one more comment on the price. Airlines typically enjoy discounts of 40% or more on aircraft off list prices. But it went to the folks in Europe, went to Airbus, did not come to Boeing based in Chicago. The other thing that happened this week, the Fed said no big hurry to raise interest rates. The U.S. recovery moderating, and that two-day meeting with the statement on Wednesday, it did leave the door open to a hike in June. But its statement implied it was in no rush to follow on from its December rate increase. It added that global economic headwinds remained on its radar, but it removed a specific reference from its last policy statement to the risks that they posed. Traders now are placing their bets that the first increase of 2016 will come in September. And less than even odds that a second hike would come by December. So not much news to change the market in the attitude of the Fed, I think, in that meeting that was held earlier this week. So coming up, I spent 3 days in Washington, D.C. this week, and it was a fascinating time, basically focusing on agriculture, and I would say the two topics of conversation that really dominated our time was the trade agreements that we have and that are pending, and secondly, food labeling. We have spent so much time on this food labeling issue that I just find it hard to believe, but I guess, as we heard over and over and over again, consumers want transparency. They want to know where their food is coming from and how it's produced. And so we're going to put it all on labels, and that could take us a half a day to do grocery shopping if every shopper stops to read all the labels before buying, but that's the generation gap between me and the, quote, millennials of today. But we spent time at USDA talking USDA business. We spent time on Capitol Hill talking to congressmen and senators. There it was the food labeling issue that really dominated. We heard from Mike Conaway, who is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. We heard from Debbie Stabenow, the ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Pat Roberts, the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and Colin Peterson, longtime friend from Minnesota, the Democrat from there, and he's been a longtime friend, still at work in Washington, D.C., and he said, yeah, I find it hard to understand all this mess on food labeling. But anyway, when we continue, we're going to join Max Armstrong, who will talk markets agriculturally with Steve Georgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. And then I'll share with you a conversation I recorded in Washington this week with Tom Slate, who is president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, talking about some interesting company he had in the U.S. last week. That and more coming up when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, by the 30th of April, generally, we're thinking about the grain crops in Argentina and Brazil being transported. And Steve Georgi from Allendale, all we have to worry about usually by this time of the year is maybe watching for a port strike or a trucker strike in South America, or maybe a belt burning up at an export elevator. But this year, we've been wringing our hands over what's going on with the crops in the fields. Yes. Still watching the fields of Argentina and Brazil for two very different reasons.
Yeah, one you've got that is too dry, the other one a little bit too wet. Now, what we're seeing, though, currently is conditions are improving. And so as we move forward and trading futures, we want to know what's coming ahead of us. We're looking at the forecasts that actually should be improving from what we have seen. So will we see the markets now kind of retrace or retract a little? As we're seeing things currently, everything is on pause. We know how forecasts get. You can see something out there in the future. Next thing you know, we finally get to that point and it's something completely different. And so we are at points right now with Argentina and Brazil where we probably are seeing declining crops and there are some problems, but we're trying to get a grasp of what kind of problems and what is the size of the issues that we have at hand.
Well, that is part of the challenge, is it not, in assessing what kind of damage has been done in those fields that were flooded in Argentina. I heard that in some areas there, maybe 60% of the fields were underwater. And the challenge is, okay, how much of that is actually going to be lost? How much of it may have terrible quality and yet, though, can be blended in with better quality grain? We don't have a lot of experience in assessing this kind of late season damage in Argentina, do we?
We don't have a lot of experience that way. But one thing that we can tell you is that as we look at what's already there, when we talk about enormous amount of carryout, and we talk about what we have currently here in our country as well, we don't have a tight crop situation. And so when you see these markets reflect some of the issues that are at hand, you now need to pause a little bit and say, hey, where should we really be? And so looking at these markets, we've seen a heck of a rally specifically for beans. You got corn up again, and we've seen a good rally here for all commodities. But where should we be? We have a lot of it out there, and we still need to get that and look for higher exports.
We've gotten off to a rapid start in planting of the crops, a little bit of a pause here in many areas due to the recent rains. But how are you sorting that out? How do you look at it? I mean, have we enhanced the corn yield already with this early planting of corn that has taken place this much in the ground this early?
You know, it is surprising. Although the American farmer is amazing at getting the crop in the ground, it doesn't take that long anymore with the equipment that is out there. When the farmers want to get the crop in the ground, it takes a matter of days. Now, looking at us currently this past week, 30% planted for corn, just 3% for beans. Yes, we are off to a pretty quick pace. We've got some rain across most of the Midwest that will slow things down. But when you do see a faster planting pace, one thing that I can tell you is as we get closer to this, another acreage report and another look at possibly an increase in acres again. We know the surprise on that last acreage report at the end of March as far as corn, big acres. But if we get more, if we have a fast planting pace, their tendency is that we get more acres as we go through.
There is some feeling that both the corn and bean acreage will climb. Do you agree?
Yes, there will be some shifting as well. Some of those acres, and what we're hearing currently out there is that a lot of these fringe acres or the fringe ground that are out there, the lower yielding areas that didn't have any anhydrous down or any fertilizer down, they will be going to beans. And a lot of that is the farmer is focusing on if we end up seeing this switch to La Nina, right? We haven't really talked about weather currently here in the U.S. And what kind of changes we may see ahead. But when you look at those areas at these price levels, the producer needs to figure out, well, am I going to go ahead and put a lot of money into this ground, which could end up resulting in a bigger loss, or at these price levels specifically for beans with the rally we have, can I go ahead and plant beans, break even, maybe even make a little bit? But a lot of these grounds, a lot of these fringe areas now are shifting, and we are seeing that out in the country.
Since you mentioned La Nina, we'll be watching the end of the growing season, and some people are pondering whether or not La Nina will arrive early and forcefully and perhaps with yield trimming impact toward the end of the season. What's your assessment of that?
Well, you're starting to see a lot of these forecasts start to shift. A lot of the forecasters were projecting that we were going to see this shift from El Nino to this La Nina, and we were going to see this shift back in out in September. So after the meat of the growing season, well, now that's changing, and we're seeing a shift. Now this shift, a lot of guys are projecting at the end of second quarter. So we're talking May and into June now, where we may end up seeing this warmer, biased, and drier weather move in from the south and actually affect some of the growing regions. And so this is an area, though, when we talk about this, the forecast, we really haven't touched on this. This rally that we have has been all money flow. It's been a lot of more of the chart patterns and other things. We haven't even dipped into what could potentially happen here if we see this shift late in the second quarter.
You mentioned money flow. Funds arrived. The big managed funds arrived on the scene.
Yes, they have. You know, and in a pretty decent way, too. When you get the dollar to retrace like it has, what we're seeing is this inflow of money now into commodities, specifically soybeans and also the crude oil market as well. So we've seen how much bearish news can we throw at you, but yet the market still goes up. And what the feeling is right now is that these managed money and it's a different type of trading style where they're going to continue to buy until the market tells them otherwise. And so when you get just money chasing money, it's like I could sit down at my desk and hit the buy button and the market continues to go up. Well, until it doesn't, I'm going to continue to buy. That's the mentality that's out there. This is not a fundamental rally. This isn't a rally that makes a lot of sense when you sit down and you try to pencil it out. That's fine. We will go back to the basics. The other thing is that we've got a lot of producers out there with a lot of grain that needs to be sold. Gold crop cash on this bounce should be looking at getting something sold, making some sales. Take advantage of what we have at hand because this may not last. Like I said, we're not even into the weather scenario, and that's why you've got this higher move and guys expecting to see a lot higher prices. What if we make our highs here in the month of April or May? We've done it before. We've got to be very careful with that. But right now is a time to be taking advantage of cash sales that you still have on farm.
Many people have been of the opinion this planting season rally is a very fragile one, a surprising gift handed to the producers, because going back to your comments about the fundamentals, many feel that the fundamentals just weren't there for this rally. In fact, I noticed Goldman Sachs the other day issued a statement indicating that the fundamentals aren't there for a wide range of commodities, whether it's oil or copper or gold or soybeans.
Well, when you look at some, you know, as guys, and as you hear out there, you hear this money flow, right? Well, what you're seeing is, If you've got money and you're going to put it into, are you going to put it into a stock market that's sitting near that 18,000 mark, or are you going to try to find something that you look at and over the last 10 years looks cheap? And so when you find money flow, and these are big dollars that we're talking, are coming into a market where you still have crude oil at $45 a barrel, you still have soybeans at $10. You've got corn sitting below $4. And when you look at what we've done over the last, say, 5 to 10 years, and you look at that at a chart and you just draw a line, fundamentals aside, because that doesn't matter. You just draw it out on a chart, you're at a bottom end. Now, we know the fundamentals right now. We've got a lot of corn out there. We've got a lot of beans that need to be moved. And we've got carryout across the globe that is still high. So we do need to be careful. Because what that does is that it creates volatility. Not necessarily is it creating a market that we should just go screaming higher. No. What it does is it's going to create volatility. And what we need to figure out is, how do you deal with that volatility moving forward?
Usage. I noticed the other day, I think the most recent figure on grind for corn was about 97 million bushels for ethanol. Down a little bit, down about a million, I think, from where it needs to be on a weekly basis to meet USDA expectations. Well, what's happening with other demand? What's happening with exports? As these prices have bounced, has it pinched off exports a little bit with the end users? Or have they thought, wait a minute, the way this is acting, it could go on up and we might miss a chance here?
You know, that's a great question, because even though prices are going higher, specifically for corn, 2.6 million metric tons this past week was our sale. That's a huge sale for us. But right now, from the current pace that we should be on for corn, we still are down about 3%. So even though that is an enormous sale, we still are behind. What we're doing is playing catch up. But we've gone from looking at making the claim that USDA needs to make adjustments to export sales to now maybe looking at it and say, are we going to surpass that? Because we are continuing week over week to have good sales. The demand is picking up. And that is where right now we are still behind the eight ball, but slightly. And so when we move forward and we start looking ahead, are we at a pace right now that we can keep up with? Because that will bring in more demand, and that should have prices really starting to figure out maybe we are putting in a low here below this $4 mark.
Steve, kind of an interesting planting season, maybe leading some of you and your industry to believe that the rest of this season might be a little bit more interesting than perhaps we thought as the year began. Thank you for coming in. Steve Georgia from Allendale.
Thank you very much.
Tom Slate, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. You just had some interesting visitors spend a week with you. Tell me about it.
Well, Arnie, it was great. It was a great week for us. We had four individuals come up from Cuba to come up and look at basically the marketing train from farmer to export terminal for U.S. Corn and feed grains.
What surprised them the most?
You know, I guess it's really hard to say, Orion. What surprised them the most, they were touched and they were moved by coming here and actually seeing U.S. farmers. We had one older gentleman with the group from the Ministry of Agriculture, never thought he'd ever come to the United States and actually meet a U.S. farmer. So I think what surprised them the most is to see the discrepancy in productivity between the U.S. and what they're used to seeing in Cuba. That surprised them. And then the technical ability, you know, particularly in the grain trade of handling grain, loading grain, marketing grain, those two things really surprised them.
I would bet the size of our enterprises were overwhelming.
Yeah, they sort of expected that, but until they actually saw it, and then match that with the productivity and, of course, the labor, you know, how much it takes to actually manage a farm like that. You know, you could see, you know, their calculations going on in their mind. They go, wow. And I think they know that. I mean, a year ago, we talked about this, and there was kind of this sense that we have to prove Cuban agriculture is worth to you. We're kind of past that now. Trying to kind of impress each other and talking about how we can meet each other's needs.
Well, let's talk about the importance of Cuba as a market for corn growers here in the U.S.
Well, you know, Orion, we've been engaged with Cuba since 1998, the U.S. Grains Council has. And, you know, over the years, we have been able to sell them corn, DDGs, with fair regularity, although our market share has, you know, fluctuated widely. I mean, back when the political imperative, you know, to try to buy from the U.S. was the Cubans had that, we were enjoying 100% market share. Recently, it's dropped down to 15-20% market share. If we enjoyed 100% market share today, Cuba would be our fourth largest export market for corn. It's that important.
Well, that is important.
Yeah.
I was there in 99 and visited some tobacco farmers and some dairy farmers. On the dairy farm, they wanted the feed that they could get from the U.S. They wanted the Holstein genetics for their dairy cows
yes.
that they could no longer
yeah.
get.
They're looking for partners, Orion. Looking for partners in progress, I'd like to call it. You know, not just go down there and sell on something, but who wants to work with these sectors to help them improve, to improve life for Cubans, and, you know, they're hoping to open up tourism to help their economy grow as well.
So let's talk about the trade part of this issue, because we're hearing presidential candidates now saying they're opposed to trade agreements. One of them would like to cancel the trade agreement. How does Grains Council view what's happening in the election?
It's not very heartening to watch this, Orion, but, you know, we've seen this happen before, you know, where, you know, we get into an anti-trade environment,
right.
and basically we're kind of just trying to keep our head down, you know, waiting till the election will come, Americans will decide, and then I think we'll have, you know, an engaged conversation on trade. A country that only has 4% of the world's population needs to be engaged in world trade, and most everyone realizes this. So the rhetoric is pretty special right now, let's just say, in Washington. And we think that as we get past the conventions, as we get past the election, we'll get back to normal, quote unquote, and start talking about trade and start talking about the importance of these trade agreements, especially to U.S. agriculture.
Indeed, trade very important to U.S. agriculture. Tom Slate, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. More to come when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
This week's time went by very quickly, so we'll end it with a quick look at where we start trade in the month of May. May wheat will start at $4.78 a bushel after gaining 3.5 cents today. May corn will start at $3.90 and a quarter after gaining 4 cents. May soybeans will start at $10.21 a bushel after gaining 3 cents today at the Chicago Board of Trade. Incidentally, some changes in margin requirements in grain trade, too, that you ought to be checking. And then in the Mercantile Exchange livestock futures, well, the July hog contract will start Monday at $81.67 a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract will start the week at $114.80. And the May feeder cattle contract will start trading Monday at $140.07. We are out of time. I'm Orion Samuelson along with Max Armstrong. Thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.